Well, hello, welcome to Foodville. That, my friends, is the sound of a mushroom being caressed. They searched mushroom songs on YouTube, and oh my goodness, they came with all of these examples of people who attach nodes to mushrooms, and then that response is then translated into a synthesizer. So all life forms have a vibration, and this is the vibration of mushrooms. I thought it's so fascinating. And then I came to find that people do entire DJ and performance pieces around the sounds of mushrooms. Our little sweet mushrooms are so musical, aren't they? So thank you for joining us here on Foodville. We're at KXRW 99.9 FM. My name is Marlies. I'm so glad you're here. I went to the Stevens and Mushroom Festival last October. I met a lot of cool people. One woman, Mushroom Mama, made these incredible art pieces out of mushroom motifs. I stopped by Brown Bottle Farm. You can look them up on all of the socials, Brown Bottle Farm. And they do cultivating and culinary mushroomy things. I got to interview Anna. She and her husband have been at it for quite a while now, cultivating mushrooms and sharing their knowledge with others. It's very cool. And then Scott Phillips told us, he's a toxicologist with the Poison Control Center, and he told us how we can be safe with mushrooms. In other words, don't eat those pretty little red and white speckled mushrooms. And before you go out and start foraging, you know, maybe join a mycological society or something, or at least get some very expert opinions on what you're eating, unless you're very knowledgeable about them. And then in the end, we're going to talk with David Benedictus. He and his friend Clancy with Martin Street Mules perform around town, and their performances benefit the Council for the Homeless. We got to catch up with David at the Kiggins Theater during the council's yearly fundraising, at which they did an incredible job of fundraising for some of our folks who live on the streets here in Vancouver. And we can be thankful to the council for all of the work that they do and encourage others to do. There's such great passion in that organization. And they really, really touch so many lives, and it's a wonderful organization to give and receive from. So thank you, Council. Before we get started, though, I found this amazing recording in 1977 from the Smithsonian Folkways Recording Collection of the Baku Pygmy people of Cameroon, who sing a song for gathering mushrooms. Welcome to Foodville on KXRW. Hey, this is Marlies, and I am out and about as usual. This time I find myself under this incredibly beautiful sky in Stevenson, Washington, as they say, nestled in the Columbia Gorge, right? Situated in the Columbia Gorge. This weekend is the Oregon, the Mushroom Festival, the Stevenson Mushroom Festival, and I am here with
Anna Wilson Falk of Brown Bottle Farm.
Yes, because Becky told me to come over, and she said your mushrooms are so beautiful. You grow them yourselves. Yourselves is you and your...
Yeah, my husband, Ryan Falk. We're based in Oregon City, outside Portland.
Okay. How did you get into the mushroom growing business? I gotta know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so we've been actually studying for about 12 years as a couple. Started in herbalism, and we just love the outdoors. Found our first wild mushrooms on a camping trip, and it's really just been... It hooked us real quick. So we've studied with all different teachers. We love reading about it, identification books, and you kind of fall down the rabbit hole pretty easy once you start. Cultivation came really naturally to us as we were also growing herbs and vegetables. We've done a market style garden, and so we just tie it all together now. We love growing mushrooms.
I love it. And what were those first mushrooms that you found? Do you remember?
Oh, morels. Ah. Yeah, definitely morels. Yeah. We started out living on Mount Hood and camping a lot up there and finding forest morels. And that just started the whole cascade.
Mm-hmm. And so now you have your own business cultivating mushrooms. Do you do it at home or do you have to have a certified kitchen or how does that work?
So we cultivate in a 10 by 10 space in our garage. We have it modified, and we control all of our variables in there, like temperature, humidity, lighting, all of it. And we are able in a 10 by 10 space to grow over 100 pounds a week. And we grow specifically gourmets like oyster mushrooms, lion's mane, chestnut mushrooms, some fun like comb's tooth, which is another type of lion's mane. In the same genus. And we have just been adding it on to what we were already doing as a vegetable farm. And then now we switched more to being dominantly mushroom and vegetables are just a hobby.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like, and I don't know for sure, that mushrooms are gaining in popularity. Is that a thing? Would you say in your experience?
Definitely. Okay. Are you kidding? As I said, we've been studying this for over a decade, which, you know, I'm almost 40. I started pretty young. We started going to the mycological societies, and we'd be the youngest people in the room, and there'd be 15 other people, and, you know, there's a big gap there. And now we go to mushroom festivals. We host our own festival, actually, about mushrooms, and not only are the age group of people broadening, there's a lot of youth, there's a lot of kids, there's a lot of people in their, you know, all age groups, but also just the quantity of people, the education, the whether it's marketing or something's just clicked for folks around the food benefits of mushrooms, it's much easier to discuss with people, whereas like 2 years ago they would have no idea what I'm talking about. Now it's much easier for me to talk to people. They already have their mushroom 101 class taken care of.
And that's interesting because you were probably part of that education, that cultural slash societal education aspect of mushrooms back then a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing farmers markets and just trying to be community-based. So exposure is a big part of it. Having the visuals week after week after week and teaching people, making it accessible, making it fun, fungi, you know.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite cooking mushroom or a couple?
I love lion's mane. Everybody loves lion's mane right now. But
why?
It's extremely health beneficial. It's being researched for all sorts of things. Cognitive health, adaptogenic functions. But my favorite way to cook it is really simple. It's a lion's mane steak. You just have a heavy cast iron on medium-high heat with butter, salt, and pepper. You put like a nice wedge of lion's mane on that. And the trick is to put a grill press or a heavyweight on top. So you're essentially creating steam on the inside of the mushroom and a nice crust on the outside. And it just, it's so delicious. You think you're eating a steak.
Yeah, sort of searing it, correct?
Yeah, caramelizing, creating a nice shell. And it and lion's mane, because it's so porous, can really absorb lots of flavors. So you, like, we've grilled it. It's very versatile.
Sounds good. And then put a nice mushroom sauce on top of that.
Oh, if you want to get, you can go real crazy. You can never eat too many mushrooms.
I agree. So what is the difference between a mushroom and a truffle?
They're both fungi. A truffle is a tuberous fungi that grows underground.
Okay.
It's intended to be spread through like other animals finding it and smelling it out, and that triggers the animal to go dig for it and spread the spores that way.
Okay.
That's why people use truffle dogs and pigs, and there's a long tradition of that. They're both fungi, and there are lots of different types of fungi. It just depends on what their means to spreading their spores to repopulate are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of mushrooms use the air, and that's how they cast out, or they are trying to be eaten by things so that they spread that way.
So what would you say would be the mushroom for someone to buy to go home and cultivate it on their counter or whatever they do, and then, you know, make that amazing meal with it?
Mm. For beginner growers, I always point towards oyster mushrooms. We have a blue.
What do those look like?
They're like a horn. They look like a little, like a little trumpet.
Okay.
But not like the trumpet mushroom. They're meatier. They have gills. They have a nice cap. Depending on how you grow them, they can grow up in sort of a trumpet shape, or they can actually grow sideways like a little shelf.
Oh.
They're very soft and meaty, and they have a sweet sort of anisey smell, really fresh smell. But those are the easiest to cultivate if you're a beginner. If you're trying to get a little bit more intermediate and want to have a really unique flavor, I like chestnut. Chestnut mushrooms have a cinnamon aroma. They're really hearty and firm. They have a nice snap and a beautiful orange and brown color.
Wow. I just want to eat some right now. Where's your stove?
Yeah.
And your skillet over here.
It's in our truck. We don't go anywhere without cooking utensils.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure that we could sit here and talk for hours about what you have in your knowledge base. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Do you have an email or a
sure.
place where people can get a hold of you?
Social, Instagram and Facebook is at Brown Bottle Farm, and our email is brownbottlefarm@gmail.com.
Right on. Well, I look forward to seeing you around, and I'm going to go get some of your stuff.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Hannah.
Yeah.
KXRW is supported by The Columbian, which provides coverage of environmental, transportation, and homelessness issues of vital interest to the region, and is made possible through its community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation, available at Columbian.com.
That song is called Liberty Cap by Wild Hearts from 1998. You are listening to Foodville on 99.9 FM, KXRW. We were talking with Anna of Brown Bottle Farms at the Mushroom Festival in Stevenson. And now we're going to go talk with Dr. Scott Phillips, who is a toxicologist. He's going to tell us how to be safe with mushrooms.
Hi, we're with the Washington Poison Center, and we're here at the Mushroom Festival helping people out if they get the wrong mushroom or there's any other medication problems or questions you might have. Please give us a call. We're always available 24 hours a day. We're free. The phone number is 1-800-222-1222. So please reach out to us. We're here to help.
Do things go awry with mushrooms on a regular basis?
Yes.
They do.
Yes, yes. We had two calls yesterday.
Oh, really?
Sometimes people are just not sure, or if they might have an upset stomach. Rarely they can get really sick, and we wind up sending them to the hospital. Usually we can keep people at home, though, and manage them there.
And what does that look like, managing?
We call back frequently. We might tell you how to manage symptoms you might have at home if you have a tummy ache or something like that. But if you're really sick, we'll say you really need to be seen in the hospital. So we'll send you in.
Okay. And how many people, do people die of mushroom poisoning on the regular, or?
It's uncommon in okay. the U.S. now.
Okay.
It's uncommon, but people do. A few people, usually less than 10 every year
okay.
in the country. Yeah, but people get really sick, particularly in the Pacific Northwest. There's some particularly nasty mushrooms that grow here regularly, so.
Can someone use a mushroom to harm someone else? Because, you know, you hear about that, right? Like, yeah. I made the mushroom tea or the mushroom soup yeah. or something, and then...
Yes. There's actually recently been a very famous case that got a lot of press in Australia of a lady who made a meal in order to kill some family members, and it did, and render some other people really sick. And I think that went through legal process, and she just got sentenced to a very long sentence term for trying to murder people with mushrooms. From a meal that you made.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting scenario.
Are there any long-term effects from mushroom poisoning?
Not usually. There are some rare mushroom things that can cause chronic kidney problems, okay. and that's an unusual one, just by that specific toxin, more common in Europe, but we do have them here as well. So that's one of the few that causes long-term problems.
Is there anything like mushroom profiling?
Profiling in what regard?
In that, you know, there's a certain mushroom that is like the bad mushroom or...
There's some that are certainly more toxic than others. Yeah, and you have to worry about those. And usually they can be very colorful and that's worrisome for them. But there's some that are just very simple looking, tan, that can also cause really deadly problems. So you have to beware, you know,
yeah.
buyer beware. You have to be really cautious. You have to understand it. You have to take a lot of classes to really understand this. And we even have mushroom experts that help us identify them, and then we do the medical management of them.
Okay. Well, and also, you know, you have this red and white polka dot tent,
yes.
which is kind of when you look at mushrooms, you see, oh, there's the mushroom. We have this train going by. Might last for a minute, huh?
Yeah.
These are not the mushrooms that you want to eat, the red ones with the white spots, correct?
Correct.
But they're cute.
Yeah, they are cute. They're in every child's storybook, the red ones with the white dots. Yes.
And is it that kind of thing that if it looks kind of like bright and cheery, that's not the one you necessarily want to eat? Is that a rule of thumb, would you say?
There's no rule of thumb okay. with mushrooms. That's the problem. They can change their shape. You can even have ones that are very edible, like morels, but in certain geographic areas, in certain seasons, they can actually cause more nausea and vomiting. Depends how they're cooked. So it's all about education.
Wow.
Join a mycological society, a group, get educated on it. Don't eat large amounts of mushrooms. We have a little handout here that tells you how to
okay.
go about it. Just have one part of one mushroom at a time. Don't mix mushrooms in a meal. There's lots of ways to stay safe with mushrooms. And if things go wrong, call us.
Okay, I love it. One time I went truffle hunting, and they said you have to be careful with the truffles because they could actually be a not bloomed part of a poisonous mushroom.
That's correct. Yeah, they grow in different stages. They're not always the same at every stage, so you have to be cautious about that.
See, and who would have known?
Yeah. That's part of the education.
Right.
And it's a fun experience.
Yeah.
It's fun learning about mushrooms.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing.
And what's your name again?
Scott Phillips, Dr. Scott Phillips. So I'm a physician that specializes in toxicology.
Okay.
So we see, diagnose, and treat people with poisonings, whether it's snake bites to mushrooms to medications to street drugs. That's all we do.
But it's very fascinating work, huh?
It's fascinating. Every day is different.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here and educating us. We all need to be educated.
Yeah, that's right. Education never ends.
Right?
We're always happy. With my sign I haven't eaten yet today. Watched as your car pulls away. I am the invisible man. This is really not my plan.
Hello, lovely neighborhood. This is Marlise, KXRW 99.9 FM. And the other night, I got a chance to talk with David Benedictus, who is a local musician. He plays with his friend Clancy Kelly with the Martin Street Mules. They played at the Council for the Homeless fundraiser when it was
It was at the Kiggins Theater a few nights ago. David has been an advocate for people who are unhoused for many years. He has worked with homeless people throughout his career, and I got a chance to talk with him about some of the myths of homelessness, about the council, and how one can volunteer or become active in the community and helpful in the community. And here is David. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a privilege and an honor to talk about the Council for the Homeless. I've been an advocate for them for years. In my 40-year mental health career, one of the most important things was finding stable housing, supported housing for people, for them to be successful. So,
what are some of the changes that you've seen? You said 40 years. That's quite a span of time.
Well, yeah, in the positive direction. I mean, people became aware that one of the myths about homelessness is always going to be with us. It doesn't have to be. It really is understanding what the unmet needs are and having an integrated system of services that where there's no wrong door to go into and people talk with each other. And then also having actual brick-and-mortar resources. So those have increased over time.
What are some of the things that specifically the council does for folks here in our community?
Oh, so much. They do outreach to people. So you see people who are living in tents and stuff, so they actually go out there and engage with them and build relationships and trust. And that's the way, through building relationships with people, that then you can talk with them about coming, taking the next step and moving into a supported living environment like these tiny villages we have around here, where people can have a safe environment. And the other myth is that it's drug and alcohol that get people there, but it's actually the opposite. People start using when they're unhoused, and they are unhoused often through no fault of their own, because of a hiccup, a blip, or you have a bubble that burst, like in 2008, and we had so many people that were unhoused. So it's really a byproduct of an economic system that needs to be rethought. In fact, what we say now with our understanding of neuroscience decoding the DNA structures, we understand that at a fundamental level, drug and alcohol problems and mental health problems are caused by early childhood toxic stress that changes the brain structures and dysregulates it and makes it hard to adapt to the culture that we have. The good news is you can reverse engineer that and build support systems around people like we've been talking about and like the council does. And they reach out to people and then build trust relationships. And then it's up to the community, local, state, and federal, to look at the resources that are needed to help people move out of homelessness.
It's a pathway, many pathways.
Yeah.
So you said that the council has raised a certain amount of money. Are you allowed to disclose that far?
I can tell you what I've seen so far. I think it's something like $260,000 tonight so far.
Wow.
Yeah, and more is coming in. So,
how do people donate? How would you plug someone in?
Well, first of all, you go to the Council for Homeless website, and they have a list of resources that are needed. I mean, for example, there's a winter clothing drive right now and a food drive. So that's dropping off those kind of items there.
Do they have to be new, or can they be used?
Gently used, yeah, and offered with love. So, the other thing is to be able to volunteer there and to learn about what people's needs. And you may be someone in the community that has a particular cultural perspective that's not available very often, and they use that to help build relationships with people. And then also you can donate a few dollars online and advocate for them and think about people is that they're really your neighbors that have fallen on hard times. What we used to say when I worked in mental health is you can never get enough of what you really don't need, and people don't choose to be homeless.
Sure.
We now have an understanding through trauma-informed services and neuroscience about what works and and how to support people long-term. When you're bringing people out off the streets, for example, in addition to mental health services, they just need regular human contact. And having actually case managers in apartment buildings where people live to help them with conflict resolution, learn about how to pay bills, build skill building and all that.
And we all want to be seen. We all want to be heard for who we are, you know. I have a friend who is no longer homeless. He said one of the hardest things about being homeless was that people just ignore you. He said, you're standing there, 100 people walk by you, but no one really acknowledges your presence or your humanity.
One of the songs we sang tonight was called The Invisible Man.
As a musician, you play music and you support through your gigs, kind of, or how does that work for you?
Last year, singer-songwriter partner of Martin Street Meals, Clancy Kelly, and I went around the spring through the fall and played at different venues around town. And we dedicated all of the gate and tips to the Council for the Homeless. Mm-hmm. So that's where we started. And then as a result of that, last October, the council invited us to play as people came in. And then we're back here again on their invitation this October as well.
Do you find folks are pretty generous?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When they find out that they're giving to help people that are in need. And that's one of the things about the council. You don't have to give a large amount of money, but just a little bit of help in the right place at the right amount of time makes a difference to people. Empathy is one of the most important human emotions, and empathy with action is one of the most empowering movements in life.
And there you have it, empathy with action. So this is your neighborhood, a wonderful, giving, generous neighborhood.
I would love to invite you to email me if you know of someone who does something wonderful and phenomenal. Maybe it's even you. For our wonderful community here, I'm at Marliese. That's Marliese at kxrw.fm. Until then, you know, take care of yourself. Take care of others. We appreciate you.
Every day you nod, it's always the same. 10 years and you still don't know my name. I am the invisible man. This is really not my plan. Wherever you don't look, there I am. I am the invisible man.
That was Martin Street Meals, David Benedictus, and Clancy at the Council for the Homeless fundraiser, and it was quite an amazing event. Thank you to the Martin Street Meals and the Council for the Homeless for all that you do in our community to help not only raise funds, but also raise awareness for those folks who are living on the streets here in Vancouver, and for getting people involved. And that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Thank you. Also, thank you to Anna of Brown Bottle Farms, our mushroom cultivator, and to Dr. Phillips, who is our toxicologist. Call the Poison Center anytime. Any time, day or night, if you've had any questions or concerns about anything that you've ingested, the number is 800-222-1222. Easy number to remember. And thank you for joining us on Foodville. It has been a pleasure to be a part of your community here on 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. My name is Marliese, and I look forward to hearing from you. Take care of yourself, and I'm signing off.